As we begin this evening's roundtable recap here, we first want to mention one of our harness racing colleagues here, Michael Carter, who works out at Northfield Park, someone who I've gotten to know greatly the last couple years here up at Meadowlands whenever he's joined us for our big racing days, a really, really great friend and colleague. He unfortunately lost his father here the last couple hours. And Garnett, I'll throw it over to you now to talk a little more specifically about Michael and his father.
Yeah, he was really close to his dad. His dad actually introduced him to racing. I know Mike, one of Mike's proudest moments is when he got tickets to the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs when it was there 2 or 3 years ago. He was so excited about it and so excited when he got the tickets. He said, the money didn't matter what he paid. It's all about having the experience with his dad. And he's been in touch with me regularly. And he told me last night that, he didn't think it was going to be long, that he's kind of taken a turn for the worst. And unfortunately, he messaged me a couple hours ago. So, Mike, from all of us here on the panel, our hearts go out to you and your family. And it's never an easy time. We just want to let you know we're thinking of you.
Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter here. We've got a special roundtable recap to recap the action that we discussed for you last week on the live show, and that was at Harrah's Hoosier Park. It was the Caesars Trotting Classic Night 2022. We saw some great action on that card. Most importantly, to lead off with, we saw a record handle in Caesars Trotting Classic Night, $1.697 million bet on the card, so fantastic for the wagering public to get involved, and hopefully you made some money on the card. We saw a lot of great performances. Of course, we saw Bella Bellini win that Caesars Trotting Classic. She beat the boys again. We saw Bulldog Hanover the race before, a 7/8 track record, a Hoosier Park record, 146-3, another devastating performance from the Bulldog. And we saw both Cool Papa Bell and Fashion Schooner, the Hamiltonian champion and the Hamiltonian Oaks champion, come back to win on the card. So lots to that action and plenty more for us to discuss here on the recap. But with that, I'll welcome in my group of panelists. We're a little reduced from last week, but we do still have three great panelists with me. Mike Rosie. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Always glad to be here.
Mike was out at Pennsylvania Derby Day. And Mike, I didn't even get a chance to ask you beforehand, before we started. How was Pennsylvania Derby Day at Parks?
It was a good time. It was a huge crowd. And they had a lot of things going on that day. They had stuff for the kids and families. They have a big picnic area there. People had tents set up. Big crowd. Food trucks, all kind of different things. The racing was great. The weather was beautiful. And I got to meet Sean Patrick Nolan. So that was pretty cool, too. It was cool to run into him and hang out with him for about an hour or so. It was a great day. I really enjoyed myself. Made a couple bucks. It was good.
Ray Catolo joined us as always. Ray, welcome.
Yeah, I got to see the PA Derby from the Turnpike. So that was cool because I was driving home during that.
And Ray was driving home from Freehold Raceway, where he graciously filled in for me this Friday and Saturday. Ray, how was Freehold?
I did my darndest to do my best Edison Hatter impression, and then that was when the whole Freehold crew came in and said, Ray, you don't need to be Edison. You can just be yourself. And then I cried in their arms. It was a moment I'll never forget in my life.
You did a good job there.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Garnett Barnsdale. Garnett, welcome.
Glad Hatter and gentlemen, how's it going tonight?
So, Garnett, you got a chance this past weekend, I saw via Twitter, to hang out with two of our good friends here of the Roundtables and Pods, John Rallis, as well as Robert Reed Jr. up there with by Mohawk on Mohawk Million Night. How was that?
That was good. I mean, the racing was fantastic. A lot of tremendous horses, obviously. It rained briefly right after I tweeted out what a beautiful night this is. So, that's like gold formula. But other than that, it was good. Rallis had a really bad beat in the last race. He had $3 pick fives going that were going to pay him like between $3,000 and $4,000 total in the two favorites. And the race basically went the only way it could for him to lose was they kind of hooked up in the third quarter. And James McDonald came and got them both at the wire. I felt bad for him, but it was a good night. I love going on those big nights and seeing all the superstars of racing and not only the horses, but drivers too.
Well, Garnett, I guess there's a preview later this week. We'll chat afterwards, but hopefully you're available later this week for the regular podcast and we can discuss a little more in detail then. But this weekend coming up, Garnett, next Sunday, Buffalo at Baltimore. My dear Ravens defense has not looked great the last couple weeks, so I don't have super high confidence going into it.
Do you have a secondary?
No.
Barely.
Well, the Bills yesterday started two backup safeties, and they started two rookies at cornerback because their two cornerbacks are out. And during the game, one of the rookies, the one that's actually better, the sixth round pick, broke his hand. So maybe the way to go is to bet the over. I'm not looking at this game as any kind of a lock with all the injuries the Bills have. By the end of the game, they also had three of their starting five offensive linemen out of the game. That's why Allen was under siege for every snap. So I don't know, man. I like to see what our injury report looks like first before having any kind of confidence in this game.
Yeah, that's actually, I think the over may be the play there, given the numbers the Ravens have put up lately. I think it was 37-26 yesterday. It was 42-38 the week before. But either way, that's conversation for a different place later this week on a different show. But for this one, we've got a lot of Hoosier Park action to recap here. And we'll just jump right in. We'll discuss once again those races we did as well on the preview show. When it starts with race number two we discussed, that was the Madison County for the 2-year-old colt and gelding trotters. And, you know, this one here, I got to turn to Mike Ramosi first because Mike and I at Penn National, we watched this card together. And once again, I'll thank Mike for dinner because I know we were sitting at dinner when this race went off. And, you know, we may have questioned Dexter's tactics in this race, Mike. But in the end, he proved why he's the best. He got there.
It was pretty rare to see Dexter Dunn allowing Homer Hockstetler to clear to the front and then control the race. However, that's what he did. And he ended up buried, but found the inside at just the right moment and kicked 27-4 to fly by everything and win as your 6-5 favorite. And I needed him greatly for some doubles and things. And he was the best horse. He got an interesting drive, but ultimately he proved best. Jailhouse Dance was the other one in there. And that horse raced well. He actually got the jump, but, you know, it's not often you blow a 5-length lead in the stretch. So that was sort of his undoing. But a good race. I feel like the best horse won. He just made it interesting.
I thought we were going to Mike because of the interesting stance he took on what odds Talent Scout would go off in this race.
He was slower than I expected.
It was where I thought he would be.
Well, good for you.
6-5. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Did you catch any tickets on the race?
No.
Oh, well, I did.
Not at the 3-1 that he was supposed to be.
Well, the double paid 100 for a dollar.
Yeah, the 13-1 shot in the first race.
Yeah.
Who, to be transparent, Mike and I both liked that 13-1 shot in the first race because of the Todd McCarthy driver that never actually ended up happening, and it was Trace Teacher getting the bike again. But
yeah, Ed, you can get your credit too. Don't worry. We'll pat you on the back. Pat.
That's funny because it reminds me of yesterday when I made a big bet on the Jacksonville Jaguars on the money line expecting Justin Herbert not to play, and he played and they killed him anyways.
Wait, they do that in football? That sounds so violent.
Yeah, it is pretty violent, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Garnett, what was your takeaways on the second race Friday night?
It's pretty interesting. Like, the boys were saying, didn't expect Dexter kind of to give up and give up the front and end up fifth at the top of the stretch, but it, you know, especially at 6-5, but it worked out, I guess. I didn't bet the race, so I was looking for a higher price than 6-5. I might have bet him at 5-2 or something like that, but it was pretty interesting. Like Mike says, horse makes a move like that, doesn't often blow a 5-length lead in the stretch, but once Talent Scout got rolling, he's going to get there, yes.
Well, to be fair, I'm just kind of happening to look here at the chart in the last quarters. I guess maybe it was a little bit of help both ways. I mean, Jailhouse Dance went 28-4. That's actually, besides Palm Jet, that was the second slowest last quarter in the race. So maybe he did come back a little bit to them. But for sure, Talent Scout's 27-4 kicker helped him get there in the end. Again, it was an interesting drive. I know Mike was more than just a little anxious coming through the stretch there. But Talent Scout, again, Dexter Dunn, they get it done there in the Madison County in race two. As we flip to race four, the Kentuckiana Stallion Management, the 2-year-old fillies, and well, that is about as formful as it gets. Hard on Fire, slight second choice in front. Kaylee S. from the second tier finishes second. Help of the Season, who I know several people liked here at the, I believe, third choice in the morning line, ended up actually off the favorite at 3-2 and had to settle for third. So 4-10-7, Kentuckiana Stallion Management, 2-year-old Philly Trot, Ray, very formful.
Yeah, I wasn't even settle for third. I genuinely thought Ren was going to send, and he just flat abandoned that. I don't know why. Maybe that last race that she put in was a sign that they were maybe trying to cool her if she had any kind of heat issues that forced her to go to the lead. I can't tell. But whether that made it so help of the season was put at a disadvantage having to kick home that hard? I can't really tell. This was a running theme through this whole card where you have these two imports, compared to like the local horses in Indiana, that come out, that rise to the top of whatever kind of cream is in the creme. You know what I mean? Like Heart on Fire, Kate came from Canada, Kaylee came from New York, and then all the local horses kind of kept up with them, got into the mix somehow. But I'm genuinely surprised by the performance of Heart on Fire. I did not think she was going to win that race. And yet she did. So, you know, this is an interesting time of year altogether, not only in this division, but in other divisions too. We're at the point in the season where expectations will change in horses in terms of what they're capable of and what they're supposed to bring and where they rank in the division as a whole. So maybe we see some horses, you know, start to kind of move in the right direction, move in other directions, because we know we're only a couple weeks from the Breeders' Crown. So ultimately, that's kind of what I take from this race and from other races we'll talk about in the future. It is another race, too, where it's just the betting was flat accurate.
Mike?
I mean, I thought that the winner was well-driven, got the perfect trip and didn't have to work quite as hard as Kaylee did, and that ultimately led to her winning. And the other horse in the race was really given no chance by being 15 lengths off at the half. So she wasn't going to catch these other two, even though she kicked 27-2. She was just too far back. I mean, she might have been the best, but that she just couldn't quite get there. And, you know, like you said, very formful. And yeah, I really wasn't crazy about, you know, as far as betting the winner, I kind of had the other two. So, and I thought the one was okay. Race pretty decent.
Garnett?
I'm just trying to figure out what Ray meant, was talking about. Did he say what type of cream rises to the creme or something like that? What the hell was that?
Yeah, you know the phrase, the cream of the creme.
No, I don't actually. Okay, but.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's weird because we all expected Help of the Season to leave, but I kind of pointed out on the preview show that why was she so far back last time? But, you know, it wasn't because the fractions were that much faster than the race before. So there's something a little strange going on there. We kind of expected and hoped that she would leave, but she didn't. And you know what? Listen, Dexter Dunn can do no wrong, but we say that pretty much daily, don't we?
He's good. Even when he's not good, he's good.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm trying to figure this out. This is out of curiosity. Uh-huh. Are you trying to say the cream of the crop or creme de la creme? Because whatever you're saying is neither of those.
He's got them mixed.
I'm
cream
saying
cream of the creme.
Yeah, that's
yeah. And either one's appropriate. Either creme de la creme or cream of the crop. You go either one, but cream of the creme is nothing.
Cream of the creme. I'm going to use this every show now. That's my best bet. I'm going to take that out of DRF and just write tonight's cream of the creme.
Well, my brain's spitting out the words as I know them. That's all I have to say.
Well, I have nothing creative to add to this race at all. Again, Heart on Fire, Kaylee, as you know, they go 1-2 rounds. Kaylee, as you're right, probably from the second tier, you know, had to work to the top there. Heart on Fire only wins by a head there, so a very good race from Kaylee. Heart on Fire ends up winning it, and yeah, Help of the Season. Already been said enough here, far, far back, and able to close into it well enough as the favorite, but the 14 lengths off at the half is not going to get you a whole lot in this type of race, chasing down Heart on Fire and Kaylee. Yes.
Well, the one thing I wonder with Kaylee specifically is, you know, she's coming from New York, so there's a lot more smaller tracks out there, and, you know, Breeders' Crown this year is going to be on a 7/8. I wonder if they make any kind of headgear changes or something like that, because for a two-year-old, that's a long stretch for them to go at Hoosier, and she only lost in those final strides, so, I don't know, keep an eye out for that if that means anything on Kaylee specifically. This is a one horse tip that may not even be valuable just out of that race. Next.
All righty. Race 5 was up next. It was the Phil Langley Memorial. Cool Papa Bell versus Pod's Adventure. The battle we expected. It was 3-5 versus 4-5 at post time. Cool Papa Bell prevailed by 2 lengths and never looked in doubt. Cool Papa Bell very confidently handed Ponda Adventure his first loss of the year. Hambo Champion backs it up with a win, right, Garnett?
Yeah, it's funny. We all had this race figured out that Ponda Adventure was going to be going to the front. Cool Papa Bell was going to settle somewhere and Pop probably grind out a win. And Todd McCarthy said, screw that. I got the Hambo Champ. I'm going to the front. I'm going to cut a 59 and one middle half. You can come out if you want. Take your chance. I wouldn't advise it. And you know what? Class prevailed, as it often does. Ponda Adventure really had no chance of chasing down the Hambo winner, who was trotting 26 and 3 down the stretch. So that was that.
Yeah, you always have to wonder in those small fields. Like, a lot of times they try to save it for, you know, a stretch sprint. Drive, yeah. Sprint. Yeah. And there's
kind of like in a race off when they go 104 to the half. And, you know, in the old days, they used to have race offs for the Hambo or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You have to wonder if maybe like it seems like the strategy of it has to change at some point. You know what I mean? Because if Cool Papa Bell gets to the front and you're sitting second, the two thoughts are, well, I'm racing for second, or I need to make that move to potentially sting him. But then it's also, there's a risk to that. And I'm stinging my horse too.
If I fail. Right. So, yeah. it's like a do
and you lose, do and you don't kind of situation.
I mean, it's a 90K race, right? So you're squandering potentially, you know, a good chunk of 22,500 if you pull and it doesn't work out. By the same token, you could have pulled him with, tried him first up and still finished second in this race. But yeah, you're right.
It's always just weird because you see, I don't know if any of us would ever expect that I have to come up in 55 ever.
No.
So it's just one, if you have the best horse and you go to the front at that point, it's the race is over.
Yep. 100%.
Now, Mike, I think something you and I discussed in both this race and the next race with the two shorter fields, you know, for those looking for a little, maybe at least a little bit of money underneath, how about 7-1 on this trifecta? It's Cool Papa Bell over Ponda Adventure. We thought clearly the top two and more or less in that order. Delgado, third choice of those three left, 7.5-1 on the try, maybe?
If you're going to cold deck it, I mean, it's okay. I think, what, Dollar Try paid $8.60. That's not bad value if you realize that you're basically betting, you're taking the race and saying, okay, this is going to be 5-2, and you're betting, you know, essentially the 8 to win at 8-1, in a sense, to be third. So,
yeah, you're betting the one to show to get $16.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. So that's a better way of saying it, actually. And that's what you got. The race was over after Cool Papa Bell left. I thought it was over. I didn't think that there was any way he was losing from there, and he didn't. I wasn't crazy about Delgado in the race, but if you liked him, that was a very good way to play it. I don't really play trifectas because the takeout's very high. I kind of stay away from them. But in this case, you know, you got 280 to show and you got a $16 try for a dollar. So obviously that was a better bet.
Well, the other thing is if you had that 5-2-1, you got lucky too, because the best finisher in that race missed third by an inch. The winner take it all, once Stratton sent that horse in the straightaway, was soaring. Which was much different from when I saw him racing at Freehold, which maybe he's just a big track horse then.
Maybe he's the bet back out of the race.
Maybe. Depends where he goes.
Well, race 7 might get another example for you and I turned to one another and said, hey, those exotics aren't bad. It's Fashion Schooner, 10 cents on the dollar, obviously in front. But we all liked, pretty much all of us like Miss Warner Fashion over M&M's Dream. And those are basically the only three in the race. So a 2-1 exacta. And a 5-1 trifecta with those numbers, again, in the 5-4 field, if you're going to bet it at all, it's not terrible.
I think that the M&M's Dream was, the odds were a lot lower than they would have been had this horse not been undefeated this year. So you have that gaudy record, that tends to, you see a lot of ones on the page, that leads to, you know, the odds being diminished. But the two shippers and the two class horses finished 1-2, and you got value. I mean, you got a $6 exacta, and the try was with the three horses was what, $3 for 50 cents.
$5 for two. Yeah, 5-1. Yeah, like Mike was saying, this is another race where you had the imports thrive over the local horses, and then Bold and Beautiful, who just cannot figure herself out, even though there's something in there. There's something in that Bold and Beautiful little filly. But
maybe you should buy her, Ray.
No, I'm not like Ed. I am not like Ed when it comes to this stuff. A horse can grab my eye, but she cannot grab my wallet. The only other thing in this race was, even though Fashion Schooner looked like she was going to hold her off the whole way, Miss Wilder Fashion put up a bit of a fight off that pocket trip.
I thought she was going by.
Mm-hmm. It was a tough
look. Well, it was that Fashion Schooner pretty impressively there, though, in race 7. Garnett, anything for you to add?
Not much. I mean, it's another case of, you know, if you cold deck the trying at 5-1, not bad. I don't see any other way to bet these races, really. You can't bet these 25 and 30, 40-1 shots to win the race. And what would have to happen for that? I don't even want to think about what would have to happen for him to win the race. Something I don't want to see.
But somehow they handled 75,000 on the race. So yeah. somebody bet it.
They had a big show plunge.
No, it was only 26,000 bet in the show pool.
That's still double what was in the win pool.
That's true.
And Ray, I had $0.00 that Mike was beside me. He can attest to that.
Well, I'm surprised considering how efficient of a play that would have been in your eyes that you didn't just put $20,000 on it.
I don't believe in bridge jumping on the really porn.
On the first date. Okay, yeah, you save it for the honeymoon. Got it. Next race. I know.
Race 10, Kentucky Anna Stallion Management, 2-year-old Philly Pacers, a horse that at least I personally didn't like. I think several of us on here were also trying to beat. But Earth, Wind, and Fire, even money favorite gets it done. But hey, it gets a little more exciting this time underneath. Sleazy Mama, Queen's Reign, 2 long shots underneath. Second choice, Vivian's Dream. Now there's an example of a post-trend trip that was nightmarish, Ray.
Yeah, and another example of, I don't know why Jordan Stratton is putting this horse on the lead. Sure, she went way too fast, and that was a reason why she folded. But at the same time, I genuinely feel her best game is just sit back and come into the race, whether it be second over or whatever. Of course, when you start pushing forward and the inside's sealed, your fate is kind of, you know, determined. You got to go forward or you're just going to have to sit out there. Most guys would rather just try and get to the front, sit at the cones and hope for the best. But, yeah, Vivian's, if anyone from that team is listening, don't put that horse on the lead anymore, please. For the love of God, she might do better. Aside from that, Earthwind and Fire, like, this is just another example of Brett Pelling, you know, he's just Brett Pelling. He comes in with a horse that you don't expect to be that, you know, that much the best. And then she just goes, daylight away from them. Queen's Reign was the main one I was looking at as a price, and she got third. Really not much else from this race for me, aside from Plan to Tell was not the long shot I thought she would be, because she finished eighth.
No, Ray, I should have pulled this replay earlier when I saw this in the chart line. I meant to look this up, but now Queen's Reign finishes third, and IM is charted before three quarters, so there was impedance towards her at three quarters. Do you know what that was charted for?
I do not know what that was charted for. If anything, let's see. Sleazy Mama was to the outside, and in front of Queen's Reign would have been Never Tell Me the Odds, who then went from 4th by 6 to 10th by 16. So chances are someone may have come to a stop.
Yeah, she was on the front and then stopped.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good guess. Yeah, Tells on a Roll also gets the impedance charted before three quarters as well. Garnett, your thoughts on this race?
I was disappointed with the horse that I bet, my Hungry Girl from the 6 hole at 24-1. I thought for sure she would leave. Jingarat took her to the back and then stayed in and got in all kinds of traffic. She wasn't going to win the race. I mean, but she was only 2 lengths out of second. You know, if she left and got position, I think she would have been in the exotics. It was just not a typical driver.
Did she come up the rail in the race? I'm pretty sure she did.
She did come up the rail in the end, but she was kind of thwarted for until maybe halfway down the stretch. And then she tried to come up the passing lane, and I mean, she was never going to win the race. It didn't matter that from that respect, it was only better to win. But you know, aside from that, I don't know that Vivian's Dream raced poorly because she was put on the front. I think going 27 and then a 27 and three quarter while parked was her undoing. I don't think she's necessarily a horse that can't be moved to the front, but that trip was never going to work. You know, and I guess the best horse won it, even money by 5.5 lengths. What are you going to do?
Mike?
I mean, I don't have a lot of thoughts in the race. I didn't really think that the three was even money, but again, when you looked at the program and then you look at the board and you see that the horse is even money, well, you know, somebody's playing this horse and thinks that she's, you know, obviously 50% or better to win the race. And she raced very well. She stayed out of trouble. stayed away from the nine, who backed through the field, basically moved at the perfect time, got separation, and that was it. And then the closers picked up everything else that didn't get, you know, cooked early. I mean, the horses that were 1-2 early were last and next to last. You know, I mean, what are you going to say? It was one of those races. If you liked the favorite and played for chaos underneath, you did okay. Queen's Reign, I thought, raced pretty well. And a lot of people on the panel liked her. She raced pretty good at 16-1, got a decent price. So just not quite good enough.
Well, next up, we had the race number 11. That was the Jenna's Beach Boy. Soaring Now, Mad Max, Hanover were two of the ones we discussed, and they went 1-2. Again, this is about as formful as it gets. Soaring Now, Mad Max, Hanover, Rip Wheeler, 1-2, 7-2, 6-1. Ray, chalk, chalk, and chalk, 1-2-3.
Chalk, 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 but this was a race where you can chalk a point to Indiana with Soaring Now kind of getting the hometown belt over Mad Max, Hanover, putting in a much better race than that Pennsylvania Sire Stakes final. My only takeaway from this is, you know, even though Soaring Now most likely is a big track horse, and that's probably where his best racing is done. The money I had on in the Milstein, I wish Joey tried to send him. I wish Joey went with him. And I'm sure Joe looks back at that and he says, maybe I should have been a bit more aggressive and not put myself in that kind of stymied position. Because this guy's got some talent. Where he goes.
Right, no one was beating by the missile that night.
Well, of course, because he had Edison Hatter money on him. That's why he says that. But and I don't even think he might have beat by the missile, but at the very least, it was like he put in a massive race there on that half mile track for as much as he was fighting that wide trip behind by the missile going as fast as he was. But point being, aside from all of that, I have no idea what to make of Early Action now. My guess is he's probably going to go to Lexington. And there's one of two things that happens. He turns into one of those horses where he's just really good at Lexington. As we all know, there are certain horses that just, that's where they do their best work. And then come Breeders' Crown, he turns into a false oyster and, you know, takes whatever money that he can't live up to. Or he's somehow springs in a new direction. I don't know what to make of it. He was real good as a two-year-old. He had some promise coming in. He had the issues at the start of the season that gave him that late start coming into the North America Cup. And this race here, I just maybe went too fast. I don't know. I don't know what to take of it.
Well, Garnett, what about here in this race? You know, Early Action was another horse that I personally liked underneath, but he was super dead on the board. Went off at 23-1 from, I believe, a 9-2 morning line.
Same, yeah. I thought he'd be higher than 9-2, but I thought about half of that. I thought he might be about 11-12-1. I didn't end up betting the race. I would have bet him at 23-1. I don't care about dead on the board most of the time. I don't know that the board necessarily talks. I'm not a big believer in that after watching this for 50 years. But sometimes you just get a better price, and that's when you should bet. But I'm glad I didn't. And geez, he was pretty bad. Like he's sitting third, sitting in third at the half behind kind of a duel, right? I mean, Mad Max Hanover was parked first up the whole back half, and he just stopped. I don't know that he's going to Lexington. Maybe he's going to Harrisburg to get sold instead.
Mike?
Well, a couple takes for me in the race is Soaring Now is pretty good and should, I think, go to the top level after this. I mean, this horse took pressure the whole way, still made, you know, all the running with a nice horse coming after him and Mad Max Hanover, who's capable of big efforts. You know, this horse still kicked 27-1. Was way lower than I thought, though. I never thought this horse would be 1-2 in this race. That was pretty surprising. Beyond that, Leighton Hanover raced pretty well, I thought, from the back, and is getting better. Could be a little tricky going forward, depending on when that horse shows up again. I wouldn't mind playing that horse probably at a similar level, like a mid-stake level type thing. I'm not sure that this horse is quite the top, but, you know, not bad. He fits in places.
Now, Ray, I'll ask you, fellow race caller, since there's always this great discussion in terms we can and can't use as harness race callers. Mike just said he made all the running. Can we use that?
You shouldn't, because the horses don't run. If the horse is running, okay, then they are eliminated. Yeah, you don't want the horse to be eliminated. Not if you bet the horse.
I think it's unnatural to say made all the pacing. Who says that?
No, well, then, that's when you realize it's time to come up with a new phrase.
Well, sure. That's okay, where
you just said creme of the creme or some crap. I don't know what you were saying.
I said cream of the cream because that's how it's pronounced. What you can do is you think of the mechanics of what these horses do. They don't. You could say made all the pacing too if you want.
I'm not.
There's nothing wrong with saying made all the trotting. Ooh.
To be fair, Ray, I guess we can't really say made all the running. So your only options really are one gate to wire or one all the way on the front end. Those are the two things we have to say.
A horse can have a front stepping victory. You got to get creative. This is the realm for the left brain.
I'm the analyst.
Alrighty, I have once read the dictionary.
Let's move on. Race 12. Started some late pick four action. Now, refresh my memory here. I know Derek was alive to all going into that last leg of the pick four, so he hit it. Mike, you were alive as well, and I think you hit it too?
Yeah, my ticket cashed, but his was a little bit better of a ticket. I took some more chances. A few of my prices raced very well, but didn't quite get there. But I cashed for whatever. I mean, what did it pay? 60-some bucks for 50 cents or something.
Well, Mike and Derek both hit their tickets, and for several others of us, myself included, we were knocked out in the first leg. Irvin Hanover, first big price on the card here, 9-1 in the elevation. Mike, you had this one, so you can talk about this race.
I mean, first, another stranger, another horse that shows up, ships in, and gets money for Burke and Jingra, was overlaid significantly. I'm not sure why that the three was 6-5 in the race. I felt that that was way too low for me.
Yeah.
You know, so you get 9-1 on Burke and you got a perfect trip. You know, this horse got the jump going into the stretch and kicked away, kicked 26-4. And it was a night, very common themes, horses shipping in from, what do you want to say? Better races, tougher races,
different circuits. Both these horses are coming from Pennsylvania.
And those are the horses that were delivering all night. So, And that's sort of when we talked about the race, we said, and Derek said the same thing, we wanted strangers in the race. So, and that paid off.
Well, the other thing too, I think of Garnsdale whenever this kind of comes up. You look at the form of that race, it looked, every horse had speed. And so it was the handicapper's fallacy of that must mean this whole race is going to be speed. I went for a closer. I fell for it. But everyone else reading every other driver reading the program can see every other horse has speed. So they might use themselves a bit early, but then look, 55 3/2, 123 3/3, it's a 57 middle half. There's no way any closer is really going to come into the race. And that's what you saw. You had the horses that were in the front three finish 1-2-3.
Darn it.
Yeah, and I thought one of the two closers was going to be Coach Stefanos, who I agree, is way over bet 6-5. Why? And did he go to? Was he sent to the front because he was 6-5? I don't know, but it didn't work out. You know, Mike and especially Derek really liked Irvin Hanover, and he was much the best. And yeah, that was a great price on him. 6-5 on Coach Stefanos was kind of ridiculous in reality.
Well, the one I liked of the Irv Miller horses was the 4 Frankie Frankie break right after the start. So that was that. That 3-1 for your second choice. So instead it's Irvin Hanover at 9-1. Upset price to start the pick four. And that was a good price to get there, Mike, because the next race, not a whole lot to be said here on this race, I imagine, besides just how impressive our big winner was. Bulldog Hanover wins by 6, 10 for 11 this year. 146-3, that is the Hoosier Park record. It's not just the Hoosier Park record, it smashes the previous record by 0.3 seconds. Fastest time ever on the 7/8 track, Bulldog Hanover. I mean, going into the first 146 flat that he paced back on July 2nd at the Meadowlands, I know the statistic was there had been like 14 or 15 miles in the history of the sport sub-147. Bulldog now has, I believe, 6 of those this year himself, so probably 6 of 20 sub-147 miles in history of going to Bulldog, something like that. I don't know, Mike, what else can we add to it?
I mean, I think that, you know, Garnett said it best. Actually, if you looked on Twitter, he said it's pointless to even try to beat this horse anymore. I mean, he's just crushing everything. I thought this was one of his most impressive races. And yes. I mean, he was never in doubt and was going away at the wire. And you never see, you know, to go 146-3 at Hoosier. I mean, that's just crazy to me, and just drown these horses. I mean, nobody even had a chance. Horses we even thought might have a chance, like Catch the Fire, you know, and he actually tried to race them and raced hard in the race early. He was gone by the time it was really time to go. Aliwag raced well enough to clean up for second, but I mean, there's nothing even in this horse's, like, everything just doesn't even breathe the same air as this horse. So just watch and enjoy, and, you know, good luck trying to bet against it. Because I doubled my ticket. That was a waste.
Yeah.
Now, Ray, when you compare this to the Thoroughbred world, you know, obviously Flightline, the major hype on the Thoroughbred side right now, but, you know, nothing personal against that field, but Pacific Classic, you know, he's racing against four other horses, Country Grammar, sure, the horse won overseas in a big race, but it's just not the best of the best, per se. But, Ray, I mean, these are some of the best free-for-all pacers we have in the sport. I mean, look what Aliwag did last year. Look at how good a Buckabet's been lately. Rocky Road would be the storyline of the summer if it wasn't for Bulldog. I mean, just how impressive is this?
If you put Bulldog Hanover and Flightline in a ring, Bulldog would beat Flightline to a pulp. I swear, I believe that full-heartedly. The thing that amazes me the most, you know, first things first, without Bulldog, you're right, this is a deep pacing division. And within the last, I don't know, let's say 5 or 6 years, this age pacing division has been getting richer and richer in quality and in ability, if those two are different. But the thing ultimately that keeps catching me is as a three-year-old, and even coming into this year, as a three-year-old, Bulldog had his issues. You know, he lost the North America Cup because he scoped sick. Coming into his four-year-old season, he wasn't really at 100% yet. But then once Darling got through all those hoops, he's been managing this horse flawlessly. And Noel Daly, too, during his New Jersey residency when Bulldog was there. This horse has been just a picture of health and of speed and of ability. And really, the only way you could think is the only way this horse can lose is if he somehow is just not 100%, but it seems like they are able to get him to 110% and keep him at that consistently. So yeah, it's one of those instances where a horse moves from, you know, a betting prospect to just a spectacle. And there's really not much you can do about that.
So Garnett, we discussed last year around this time on the podcast, talking about Test of Faith versus the rest when it came to Horse of the Year. Is it safe to say at this point, even if Bulldog by some bizarre chance manages to lose out the rest of the season, or, you know, just doesn't race the rest of the year for whatever reason, he's wrapped it up, right?
I think so, and I can't see him losing out. I mean, if he was to come out and lose two races in a row, are they going to keep racing him? Obviously, something has gone amiss if that happens, right? But, you know, I want to take a little bit of a closer look at this race, and I agree with Mike that this might be his most impressive race, and for two reasons. First of all, they raced him. He had to make a move into a half that was going 53-2. So he goes a 46-1 mile. Now let's take a look over here at race number that we didn't talk about. Race number 9, the Carl Becker Memorial. You got Warwick Vital, who's one of the fastest horses in North America, winning on the front end, full out. He got challenged in the stretch by Let It Ride and Later Dudes. He was used. Trevor Henry was asking him for everything he had, and he paced a 149-1 mile. Now, I've seen this horse pace in 47-1 at Mohawk under similar circumstances. So this 146-3 mile here, I mean, listen, I took a while to come around on this horse because I'm skeptical by nature. I'm an old, miserable person by nature. But if you get perfect conditions at the Red Mile, and I'm talking perfect like we've seen them sometimes, I don't know what this horse is capable of at this point. Because this 46-3 mile, when you consider every other race of the night and how fast the track was playing, which wasn't very fast, it's just unbelievable to me. And that's all I got to say about that, as Forrest Gump would say.
Well, I guess we could spend forever on this, but it's pretty straightforward, at least from a betting perspective, especially in the late pick 4 tickets. 1-20 single, Bulldog, again, the superlatives, we've outlined some of them there, how impressive he's been. And yeah, I think, Ray, you can probably help me with this. What do we have for the rest of the season? So the Alaraj comes up at the Red Mile in 2 weekends, October 9th.
Yeah, October 9th. That is the Dayton Pacing Derby, right?
Oh, Dayton Pacing Derby, correct. Yeah. And then Breeders' Crown at the end of the month.
Then Breeders' Crown, and then it's daddy time. Or TVG. That's also, that might maybe TVG before. It's up to how frisky Bulldog's feeling.
I thought, well, they'll do TVG final then retirement probably, right? Or stud.
Yeah, he would be eligible to TVG finals through his races in the McKee, or not in the McKee, in the Houghton and the Graduate. No, the Graduate he wouldn't be eligible in. But do you have enough points from just the Houghton?
Have they announced officially? Is this it for Bulldog? Have they said anything on that officially?
No, nothing officially.
But in theory, we could be looking at two kind of farewell tours, per se, coming up here in the next month, month and a half between, of course, the Great Atlanta, who we discussed a little bit on the show, and Bulldog, the next couple races. And they've got very similar paths, actually, you know, kind of going through the Red Mile, coming through the Breeders' Crown, mm-hmm. and going through the TVG Finals. So
yeah.
They both will be very interesting storylines to follow, as they may be kind of in the twilight of their racing careers for now, it would appear. For Atlanta, for sure.
Yeah.
Bulldog, we'll see.
And Bulldog will destroy Atlanta on the racetrack. I don't know why she's going to race him. She's a trotter. He's a pacer. That's two houses split by indignity. You've read Romeo and Juliet.
Well, race 14 comes up next. That was the Caesars Trotting Classic, the big race of the night for 220,000. And we're starting to run a little short on time, so we really don't have time for Ray to discuss this race. Whatever. Ray doesn't care about the winner anyway.
I don't want to talk about it.
Garnett, what did you think about this race?
I want to say one thing. Sometimes I just want to say one thing to bettors out there who seem to think a horse always has to be moved. Sometimes staying in is the right move. And in this case, it was. And I don't think if Bella Bellini goes first up, she wins this race. But because Dexter stayed in, kept her covered, he was absolutely loaded in the final eighth when he got out. You know, and we're conditioned, especially guys who've been betting this for a long time, to automatically get angry when a guy stays in because you got to wait and you might not get room. But sometimes, even if they would have been pulled, they're still not going to win the race. And it takes a trained eye to understand that. But by nature, we say, damn it, the guy stayed in. What a shit drive. It's not always that way.
Yeah. And on top of all of that, it's a matter of understanding how these horses race, too. I can name you so many horses from my tenure in this sport that they just like to race one way. They have a specific way where that's how you get the best out of them. And this is a textbook case of Dexter understands Bella can grind, but she's not a grinder in the first over way. It's you give her the cover, you give her the time, she will outsprint anybody no matter what. She has that one move and it's lethal. If you try and spread that move, she's not as strong as the setup, too.
When she gets setups, then she's deadly. That's the thing.
For sure.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Now, Mike, how about when we look at Quattro de Olio, who, by the way, Bella Bellini was going to the gate as the post-time favorite, and all of a sudden, late money came in. Quattro de Olio ended up going off her favorite, Yannick Gingroff, her trainer, Marie Ortolan Barr. Was there an excuse there for Quattro de Olio, maybe having to go take clear to the top there past the opening half? Is that an excuse for him there, or did he just not have it through the stretch?
No, I think that's his preferred way of going. I think that he doesn't like getting doubled up because he tends to run whenever he does that. He likes to be up front. He likes to control races, and that's whenever he races very well. I don't think that's an excuse at all. I think he got his trip. He just wasn't good enough. And mm-hmm. You know, he did get roughed up. Jujubee was better, I think, than anyone thought he would be. He raced pretty well to the last 16th of a mile. He was right in that race for quite a long time. And then, you know, they kind of cooked each other, and, you know, the cream rose. That's for you, Ray. But Bella really didn't look like a loser mid-stretch, and I thought it's academic raced very well from the back. I didn't mind him in this race, and he's capable whenever things kind of go his way also, and he raced pretty well, but they were never touching her. She got her trip, and you know, that was that.
Once she saw racetrack, you knew what was coming. You could mm-hmm. see it even when she was still four lengths back.
Because she, yeah, exactly. She's when she gets covered up like that and she gets that clear sailing, all she loves to do is pass horses. The only other takeaway I have from this is the last couple of weeks, you know, it's academic. We all remember as a horse that you wanted him in kind of like the second rate trot stakes races because you knew that Yannick would just put him on the lead and then he could rate better than anybody and no one was going to get by him. The last couple of starts, now that he's been racing against some of, you know, the better trotters in the country, he's shown a different dimension. And to me, that's a sign of a horse that potentially has something a bit more versatile in the long term. 20-1 on that, I couldn't have taken that horse in that spot. But time and time again, its academic is impressing me. But he definitely wasn't winning that race. Though, all that to say, watch out for him.
Well, I know on TVG, but leading up to race day, we were also like the 7 Juju B, who I liked as well. You know, obviously interesting situations coming into this race, but ultimately, as we discussed here, he did race okay there, you know, was second, you know, top of the stretch, ended up finishing fifth, picked up a check there. So maybe that's a start of him starting to work back on the right track here at the very end of the season. But before we turn the page, Ray, we got to go back to you. Now, wait a minute. You are beside me, Mike Probosi, and Garnett Barnsdale on Hamiltonian Day at the Meadowlands, screaming like a six-year-old girl to get to the windows, and bet Bella Bellini at even money, and you are clutching the ticket like you've got $1,000 to win on this animal the whole way around the track, and you don't even bet her here?
Look, here's the thing. You bet the first $50, you feel the thrill. You bet the second 50, after a while, it feels like 500. You bet the next 50, it feels like 5,000. Your old boy is just trying to take care of himself, and on top of that, did a wicked great job at Freehold. I mean, that I had such a blast that whole weekend, you know, reading the thesaurus. I've watched Back to the Future 1 and 2. I got no excuses. I had a great time.
You had a blast, but you're also announcing on this podcast that you did a super great job. Is your arm getting sore from patting yourself in the back?
His pocket for the money.
I'm having a great time.
Ray's probably right. That's a shame, Ray. I really enjoyed listening to you this weekend at Freehold. They're gonna have that usual loser back next weekend. Whatever. Race 15, Mike. We didn't really discuss this race in the pod, but we kind of did, obviously, with late pick four tickets. I had nothing alive. I don't know about you, Ray or Garnett, but for at least you and Derek, Mike, I was cheering for better price. But unfortunately, you get 4-5 favorite. Good news, cash tickets. Bad news. There were better payouts out there, especially for you with some of the chances you took in other races. If you could have gotten, especially Bulldog. If Bulldog went down, that really would have increased your payout. But even here, you had a chance, some bigger numbers.
Yeah, I had It's Academic on my ticket. You know, so I had some prices. But, you know, and Dexter teased in this race. He looked like he was going to win first up there with the 3 just to start, and ended up, you know, kind of caving in whenever Sure Thing Herman decided to kick in. And he kicked 26-1 to win, and he was the best horse in the race. He got a pretty good drive at 4-5. And you know, he was supposed to win, and he did. So, I don't know. I mean, it still paid okay. When you consider Bulldog was a 99% single for everybody, you still got, it paid, let's see, 63 for 50 cents. So that's 126-1 on that pick four. And you got Bella Bellini, who was basically a top two choice. This horse was a favorite in the last race. So you took a 9-1 shot in the first race and turned into a 126-1 shot pretty easy there.
Yeah, I mean, it was for 99, I'm legitimately going to say for 99, maybe 98% of tickets, it was a pick three. I mean, Bulldog was the absolute single on most ticket combinations out there. But yeah, definitely, and you're right, favorite in the end there as well as Bella Bellini. So Irvin was for sure the price of the sequence. Ray, Garnett, thoughts on this race?
I was all in this race, and I want the record to show that when I said I went all, the other thing I said was, and the 10 will probably win.
This is true.
That's true.
Garnett?
Just that, you know, from a betting standpoint, if you really liked Irvin Hanover at 9-1, you could have hit this thing several times. I had it no times, but, I mean, like Mike said, look what it paid. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be that hard to have a $5 one with single by single by two by single. Mm-hmm. You could have got that for $10 if you liked Irvin Hanover. You could have had five, you know, hit it five times. And so, you know, there's money to be made even when chalks win. I know people complain a lot when chalks win, but it's all how you bet a lot of times, right? So,
well, to recap this Hoosier card, let's go around real quick here. Favorite thing of Hoosier Park's Friday evening card of Caesar Trotting Classic Night. We all have to have different things, and I'm going to go first, and I'm going to steal the easy one. Bulldog Hanover, incredible mile, fantastic seeing him on the track. Every time we get to see him, no matter how many more times that may be. Mike, your favorite thing of Caesar Trotting Classic?
My favorite thing was the handle. There were decent pulls in every, you know, almost every race. Another thing I liked was the fact that they did this big night on a Friday and didn't compete with Mohawk's big night on Saturday. So I liked that quite a bit too, because both of those nights I think needed to have their own night. So I liked the placement of the card and the handle. I thought both were very good.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, you know, especially to our listeners out there that may be trying to come to the harness side of things, we discuss all the time, you know, the big misconception is always that the pools are small in harness racing. This is a great example that, I mean, Mike, you and I were sitting at Penn National, Thoroughbred Action in front of us. This card outhandled Penn National. It probably outhandled Charlestown. I mean, they outhandled legitimate Thoroughbred tracks. So there are serious pools to play into on a night like this, and especially at a place like Hoosier on most nights.
Yeah, it's the best drivers, the best horses. I mean, it's, you know, I was playing, you were playing.
Ray, best thing for you?
My favorite thing was Bella Bellini. My least favorite thing.
I should have left you that one.
My least favorite thing was that my Bella Bellini alarm did not go off.
And Garnett?
Well, you stole the bulldog right away. So, you know what? I'll go with War Revital. I like seeing, he's such a cool horse. Very high speed, very tough to get past when he makes front. But, you know, something else we should point out, and not only because Hoosier Park sponsoring these shows, but also, you know, maybe partly that. For anyone that's never been there, it's one of the best tracks in North America, Thoroughbred or harness. It's well run, it's clean, and it is one of the greatest angles to watch a race at the rail because of the way the track's built. You're standing at it almost at eye level looking at the track. I don't know if you guys have been there and noticed that, but you know, they got stadium, they got like almost like theater seats in the stands. They got great places to eat. You know, it's a little bit far for me to get to, but for anybody that's close, somewhat close, you should get to Hoosier Park. It's a fantastic track.
Well, again, we do for sure thank Hoosier Park for their sponsorship of this roundtable and this recap show. For Hoosier Park, their season will be coming to a close here in the next couple months. They'll wrap up, I believe, just after Thanksgiving. Then they'll take a little bit of a break till they come back next spring. But they will have plenty of great racing action in 2023. And in fact, they've got a fantastic schedule to look forward to next year. Dan Patch Night comes up each year in the middle of August, one of the major stakes races there. We got to see Bulldog win there as well earlier this season. Of course, the Caesars Trotting Classic Night comes up in September. And as was announced on this year's Dan Patch Night, the Breeders' Crown comes back to Harrah's Hoosier Park coming up next year at the end of October. So a fantastic 2023 season awaits. And hey, they've got some more Grand Circuit action out at Harrah's Hoosier Park in early November as well before they wrap up this season. So there's a lot to look forward to out there in Indiana. Again, we thank them for their sponsorship, and our absolute kudos to track announcer Michael Chamberlain for fantastic race calls throughout the evening, for Rick Moore, Emily Gaskin, saw Gabe Pruitt on there a bit as well, Hollywood Hayden on there for all of their fantastic handicapping. Jacob Reinheimer does a great job out there with the Harrah's Hoosier Park team as well. So again, we congratulate all of them on a fantastic evening, a record handle, and we wish them the best for the rest of their 2022 season. For those of us here on the roundtable, just to recap, look forward a little bit here for the rest of the season. So, Ray, I'll turn to you to correct me on the stuff as we go. But our next major racing weekend, for those that kind of got pulled in by the jug and by this big night and that really want to keep going with the harness stuff, plenty of racing every day, of course, much like all your Thoroughbred tracks. But in terms of the major days, next major event coming up for us, Ray, the Red Mile. Starting this weekend, next weekend, two major stakes weekend. Next weekend is the big one, correct?
Well, that depends on... Some people say next weekend is this weekend, and other people say this weekend to mean what is next weekend, which is...
Yeah, so Friday... So this week it's Thursday to Saturday. By this week, I mean as in 3 days from now, so September...
Thank you for clarifying.
September 29th.
This weekend at the Red Mile is the start of the Grand Circuit Fortnight. So that's Bluegrass Stakes action for all divisions, freshman and sophomore. The next, and on top of that, October 1st. So this weekend too, also the Dayton Super Finals. So you have the Ohio Sire Stakes Finals, the Pacing Derby, the Oaks, the Distaff. Big stakes night at Dayton on this same weekend, because then next weekend, the weekend of October, that would be the 7th. Yeah, October 7th is International Stallion Stakes, Tattersall's Pace at the Red Mile and the Alarage Farms. That, I believe, is the last major stakes weekend before Breeders' Crown.
Now, Ray, I always throw this to you because I always forget, so I'll let you say them once
Indiana
again.
Indiana Super Finals are actually the week before Breeders' Crown. Let's not forget that.
Pacing Triple Crown in the sport of harness racing just concluded that the Little Brown Jug, those three races are?
The pacing Triple Crown is the Cane Pace, Messenger Pace, and the Little Brown Jug. Cane Pace won by Beach Glass, Messenger by Please Let Me Know, Jug by the Missile. So you know what that means. No Triple Crown.
Trotting Triple Crown, we will wrap that up in a couple weeks at the Red Mile.
Yes, and it is not up for grabs. Yonkers Trot winner was Joviality. Had she not been so graciously beaten at the finish line of the Hambo, we may have been looking at a filly winning the Trotting Triple Crown. I think Joviality is going to go for the filly futurity, but either way, the Kentucky futurity does wrap the Trotting Triple Crown.
And after that, as you kind of alluded to, Ray, the end of October, Mike, next up on the major stakes schedule, and we hope to have a roundtable and a recap show for the Breeders' Crown up at Woodbine Mohawk. Mike, you'll be there. Garnett, you'll be there. Several of our participants here, John Rallis, Robert Reed Jr., I think you all will be up there at Woodbine Mohawk for the big weekend.
Yeah, I'm ready, too. I'm starting to get excited, especially to hang out with all those guys, because I'm going to tell you what, some of these guys are the best harness players that there are on planet Earth. So, you know, I like to hang out with those guys. I like to, you know, get their opinions. You know, we kind of brush things off each other and things. And it's the best horses, the best racing. Mohawk puts on a great show. I love it up there. It's a great place to be. I just can't wait. I'm very, very excited for the Breeders' Crown this year.
One thing to remember, dress warmly. Bring a warm coat because even in the summer.
It's Canada.
Even on a warm summer night, once you get it gets dark, you get past the fourth or fifth race, it gets really cold there some nights.
Wow, it's like you live in Canada.
Yeah.
And Garnett, I think barring, you know, there's some other stuff throughout November, we'll have some Hoosier Stakes action and the Grand Circuit, and there will be the Matron Stakes, why am I drawing a blank, Ray? The pace at the progress pace. Gosh, the progress pace over at Dover Downs. But Garnett, it'll really all wrap up with the TVG Finals, the Meadowlands. We hope to have a roundtable and recap for that as well. And the TVG Finals, Garnett, they might be especially worth watching this year because they very well, for sure, they'll be the last time it would appear. Although, to be fair, they did say this before. We'll see Atlanta on the racetrack, and it could very well be the last time we see Bulldog as well.
Yeah, and, you know, Atlanta's such a cool mare. My favorite Hambo winner, mostly because I made a very large bet, and I was 100% right that she was she's going to the front, even though the driver told us he was going to get a trip, that he's going to be looking for a trip. But, yeah, and you know what else? I'm looking forward to up here. We're going to have some Grassroots and OSS Gold Finals. And, you know, Grassroots, they really race. So, you know, I know last week in some of the semifinals, there was a lot of favorites that won, but they really race in those races. And a lot of times you get some good prices and some strange results. So I'm looking forward to those races, too, which are right around the corner.
Well, there you have it, racing fans. There's your preview of coming racing attractions. Again, we'll talk to you plenty more here on this show for Woodbine Mohawk racing action for the rest of the year. And again, that will include the Breeders' Crown coming up there. And again, we're looking forward to hopefully partnering with the Meadowlands again in the future here at the end of the season to cover some of their racing, including the TVG Finals night. And again, we'll again thank Hoosier Park once more here for their participation with the Caesars Trotting Classic. Congratulate them again on a fantastic evening of racing out there last Friday. And for you listeners, we hope you had a successful evening betting the races. Hope you've enjoyed this recap discussing the events of last Friday night. And we'll wish you the best of luck with all your future wagering endeavors. Hope all your bets are winning ones. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye!